Welcome to the Ambon. Start off with a little bit of intro since it's the first episode. I'm Matt. I'm a sophomore, Emerson College, right-handed pitcher, and Boston Red Sox fan from Massachusetts.
And I'm the co-host, number two, Ezra. I also a right-handed pitcher, but I'm from Baltimore. And I'm a huge Orioles fan, so hot takes incoming.
Oh, yeah, we're full of them. Well, we're just going to jump right into it and start off with one of the lesser looked at categories, which is Manager of the Year for awards. I agree with the voting for the most part.
I think in the NL it's pretty good. I would probably put Brian Snitker a little higher. He finished fourth and 4 points behind Schilt, who was in third. But I mean, come on, he won the series. He should be there.
Yeah, I agree. The only thing is they do the voting before the postseason, so based on regular season. So yeah. I see Snicker at four. I'm not too mad about it. He did turn the team around, so I mean, four is not a bad place for him. But I mean, the big thing is Gabe Kapler at one. He took a team that was supposed to be third in division under 500 until
and won 107 games with them.
100 plus one team.
But the AL, that's the real talking point here, because Kevin Cash needs... He shouldn't have won. He shouldn't have been in the top three, maybe not even the top four. That's like...
I don't think Kevin Cash should have been top four at all. I think winner should have been Scott Servais easily.
100%. He took the Mariners nearly to the playoffs. Like, that's a feat in itself.
A team that has no one but, like, Seager and Kyle Lewis, who was pretty much injured all year.
I mean, they got Haniger, and he juiced some balls at the end of the year, which, you know...
It was just a miracle they even in playoff contention at the end.
We always see year in, year out, the Mariners start off real hot, then they fizzle out. But this year, they actually kept it all the way through, and I think that's actually really impressive for them. But really, Kevin Cash needs to be gone. Like, it's the Rays. They're a fantastic team. They're just poor. Like, they could win. They're just poorly managed, and I put that all on Cash.
Yeah, I'd say the one thing about Cash, like, I feel like he's a puppet in the Tampa Bay Rays system. They're an analytic team. I don't think he makes any of the decisions. I think all the decisions, roster-wise, lineup-wise, they all come from up top, and he's just a puppet that holds position.
And another thing with that is that he should be out of the top four. I think, obviously, we've talked about Servais winning, but Dusty Baker, as much as everybody hates on the Astros, it is impressive how he just got through all of that and brought that team within a game or two of winning another World Series. Like, gotta love Dusty. Astros, meh, but love Dusty.
Yeah, Dusty's one of the best managers, I think, of all time, if not.
I mean, it's pretty undeniable. The dude just finds ways to win with whatever team he's with. Speaking of winning, Rookie of the Year. The NL Rookie of the Year, India winning, I have no issues. I don't think I have any issues with the voting either. I think that India was far and away the best rookie in the NL. Trevor Rogers was good, but he wasn't as good as India. Patrick Wisdom maybe could have been bumped up a little bit because that dude was on fire the end of the season.
Yeah, I could see Wisdom getting bumped up a little bit. I mean, just looking at numbers, he had 10 more home runs than Dylan Carlson, who finished in third place above him. I think the only thing that Dylan Carlson has the edge on is he had 43 more games than Patrick Wisdom.
And the slash, even though his OPS is lower because of the slugging percentage, he was getting on base at a .343 clip over Wisdom's .305. And the batting average, though, the 30-point differential is really what's helping Carlson there, in my eyes at least.
Yeah, I totally agree. Hopping over to the AL Rookie of the Year. I mean, I got some hot takes about this one, but I'll let you start because I know you're passionate.
Randy Rosarena might have deserved to win, but Ryan Mountcastle finishing sixth in the voting is absurd. He finished first for rookies in home runs. He was second in RBIs. He was, I think, third in batting average. His on-base percentage was over 300. He was slugging nearly 500. Like, the man deserves to have some recognition, and he didn't get any. He wasn't even in the top three. Wander Franco played, like, 70 games. Mountcastle played the whole season. Wander Franco, I'm like, he's a great player, but this year to be in that top three spot. And Luis Garcia was fantastic. I'll give him that.
See, I take it. I have an opposite approach here. I think Wander Franco is good enough to be top three, but I think I like him at three. I don't think Luis Garcia should be close to top three. I have him down at 4 or 5, personally.
I just think that it was the longevity for Garcia. The dude did it all season.
Yeah, he had 30 more innings pitched than McClanahan, finished in 7th, and 40 more than Manoa, who finished in 8th. But I just think his numbers just 3.48 ERA, a 1.17 WHIP, just...
I mean, for a rookie in the AL, that's pretty impressive, though. I think that the consistency that he had, I don't remember a game where he really got smacked around too much besides from the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I just see a guy out here, I know relievers don't get a lot of love when voting, but Emmanuel Clase, I mean, a 1.29 ERA and a 0.9 WHIP. 70,
that dude was
71 games for the Cleveland Guardians now, but...
Guardians.
Yeah.
No more lawsuit, though.
No more lawsuit. Alrighty, hop over to AL MVP, because we'll just take a peep at...
The AL MVP, it was undeniable. Nobody's had a season like Ohtani.
It was Ohtani. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean,
Guerrero being in second in voting makes perfect sense. The dude almost finished in the trip with the Triple Crown. 48 bombs and 123 runs scored. A 401 OBP and a 311 batting average. That's crazy. And he's so young, too.
I mean, I think Guerrero could have won the Triple Crown and still not have won MVP.
I don't think he would have, even if he did. I'm with you on that, Matt. Ohtani was just in another world. You can't pitch that well, hit that well for an entire season, and not win the MVP.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Ohtani is the amount of games he started this year. I mean, he started 23 games. In the past, he's been just getting hurt. I know he had Tommy John last year or 2 years ago. But, I mean, he really came out this year and just shoved.
And not only was he shoving, he was hitting bombs. I remember first week of the season, I think, he hit a ball 450 feet and threw an 101-mile-an-hour fastball, and he was doing it all season. It's just something you can't deny how great of a season. It's one of the greatest seasons I've seen since I've been alive.
Yeah, I think it was just one of those things that we were waiting for him to break out. Just looking at the numbers here, I mean, we always knew he was going to be a star hitter, but, 2018 to 2020, he made 12 starts, and he just didn't have stuff, especially in 2020, 2 starts, a 37 ERA. We were all just, waiting for him to break out and have that longevity of, like I said, 23 starts, 3.18 ERA.
It was a matter of time, and he showed it. I know that we always talk about how wins and losses aren't really a great stat for pitchers anymore. DeGrom won with a barely over 500 record when he won the Cy Young. But Ohtani did only lose 2 decisions. That something's got to be said for that, because I know he wasn't pitching as often as normal starters. I think that Gerrit Cole threw 181 innings and Ohtani only threw 130, but Gerrit Cole wasn't hitting 46 bombs.
Yeah, Gerrit Cole wasn't almost joining the 30-30 club with.
Yeah, no. An unreal season, and I really hope he can keep that stuff up because it is so fun to watch, even though it's the only thing that MLB posts about on Instagram.
He is great for baseball, that is for sure.
Now, moving into the NL MVP, I got a qualm, Matt. I got a big qualm.
Let's hear it.
Fernando Tatis. He's a great guy to watch. I love watching him. He's a fantastic player. And yes, he led the NL in home runs. But he played 130 games. It seemed like every week he was making a bonehead mistake in the field. And number 5 in NL MVP voting is Trey Turner. The man led the NL in hits with 195. Actually, the major leagues in hits with 195. 32 stolen bases led the NL. Led the MLB with a 3.28 average. His OPS was 9.11. And his WAR was 6.5. There's no reason those stats, with 28 bombs along with it, that those stats shouldn't be in the top 3.
Yeah, I mean, I agree totally. I wrote an article on September 9th that I had Trey Turner winning the MVP. I mean, the guy was looking to have a 30-30 season. Like you said, he missed it by 2 homers. Led the league in batting average, led the league in hits. He was, just came over to the Dodgers, switched positions, and he just kept hitting. The guy was a monster all year.
Yeah, I mean, him, Soto, and Turner, and Harper, should have been the top three. Those old natty boys. Imagine that lineup, though.
Yeah, that would have been insane.
But there's no qualms with Harper winning, right? I mean, he should have won.
I think it was
the numbers back him up. I think Soto, you know, that 465 OBP with 145 walks is extremely impressive, but I think the numbers just back Harper.
I think anytime you have over a 1 OPS, you're easily in top 3 MVP conversation.
Right. I mean, that's just, you gotta. And then another thing about this before we move on is Brandon Crawford. He's not getting enough love. The dude was just amazing. It was just amazing.
Yeah, he definitely had a bounce back season.
It's been a while since we've seen him produce offensively like that. And to do that with his, you know, platinum glove at shortstop. And I think another fact in him being fourth in the voting is just that he led that team.
Yeah.
That Giants team would not have done that without him. Like, his numbers might not be MVP level numbers that we expect, but he led that team to being the best in baseball.
I think he easily had the best season of his career. I mean, the only other year he had 20 bombs was 2015, and this is easily the highest average of his career. He had 298 this year, but 2016 he hit 275, and that was his next highest. I mean, 2016 was the only other year he was in an MVP convo, and he finished 12th. I just think that he had a great year, and I'm excited to see what he's going to do next year.
There is a possibility for downturn, though. We know he's getting a little older, so I'm really excited to see what he does, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit of downtick again, back to his normal ways, so to say, just because that age factor is going to catch up to him soon.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, especially with, like, the Giants in general. I mean, just looking at their team right now, I mean, their top five players, Posey retired. You don't even know. Kevin Gausman already left. We're copping that a little bit later in the show, but it'll be interesting to see how their pitching does compared to last year.
Yeah, and speaking of pitching, I mean, the Cy Young, our award, the arm barn, we love our pitchers. And this is where I have had my biggest qualm in award voting in a long time.
I agree. I was very upset about these.
Like, there's no Scherzer. I know the last two starts weren't his best, but almost 180 innings, only gave up 119 hits. His whip was .864. That's nearly unheard of for a starting pitcher. And the man was striking out everybody in his sight. He had 236 strikeouts and an ERA plus of 166.
He had a great season. I actually had him second in my voting.
I can see that.
I had Zach Wheeler going number one. I mean, guy had a 2.78 ERA with 30, 40 more innings pitched than Scherzer. Led the league in strikeouts, led the league in batter's face. The guy just got outs all year, and that's the name of the game. I mean, he had 3 complete games and 2 shutouts. Scherzer had 1 complete game. I mean, the only other shutout I can think of from the NL all year is in Adam Wainwright, but I just don't see anybody else like the longevity. He just got outs all year.
He was a workhorse that we haven't seen in a long time. The 200-plus innings of consistent pitching, and his WAR was 7.6. And Corbin Burnes, the winner, who I don't think should have won. I'm with you on that. I actually do think Wheeler should have won. But Burnes had a 5.6 WAR. The only two stats that he had on Wheeler and Scherzer were ERA plus and ERA. And we know how reliant the ERA is on the team around you.
Yeah, I just think the big thing was, like I said, Wheeler. I mean, with a big, like, base, looking at, like, the huge thing nowadays is if he can get through a third time in a lineup or pulling him before the third time, before batters get a third chance to see him. And time after time, Zach Wheeler is just going out there, and third time through a lineup, fourth time through a lineup, it did not matter. He just kept up going. Same, like, similar stats to Scherzer and Burnes. Was his ERA a little bit higher? Yes, but at the same time, I just think he was a workhorse, and you gotta give him votes for that.
It's something that we really haven't seen in a long time. And an- another thing that I would be remiss if I don't mention is that Scherzer finished higher in MVP voting than both Burns and Wheeler. But not only that, we got to talk about where Wheeler finished in the NL MVP voting, because he was, I think, five places down from Scherzer and Burns, but the dude was just, I think he was the best pitcher in the league.
Yeah, Scherzer finished 14th, Burns 15th, and Wheeler finished 19th.
That's just, they should have all been neck and neck, but I think Wheeler, at 19, Wheeler should have been above both of them, honestly, and he should have won the Cy Young.
And I mean, I hate saying this, because I don't think the MVP is a WAR award, even though it tends to be nowadays, but Wheeler led the National League in WAR. Yeah. 7-7.
It's something unprecedented for pitchers, really. Do we agree on the AL Cy Young? I feel like it's...
I agree. The only thing I look at the AL Cy Young is I've tweeted about it. I want more consistency. I mean, you look at Cy Young, Robbie Ray, Garrett Cole, Lance Lynn, and Eovaldi was fourth. And I agree with it for the most part that Eovaldi should have been fourth. But then I looked at the AL MVP voting, and when you see Robbie Ray, Nathan Eovaldi, and Garrett Cole all tied for AL MVP, and Lance Lynn not even in the top 20, it was just, I need to see consistency.
That's something that is severely lacking, and I think we all know that. But Robbie Ray, I think he was deserving of the win. I mean, the dude was just so good.
Yeah, I mean, same thing with, like, Wheeler, led the league in innings pitched. He led the league in games started and ERA and strikeouts.
And WAR.
And WHIP. It's
not something that you can really refute, I don't think. But on the topic of Robbie Ray, let's get into it. He went to the Mariners.
Something, like, I did not see coming.
I don't think anybody did. You know, the crazy thing is that I actually predicted that Ray was going to stay in Toronto and Gausman was going to go to the Mariners. I guess I was a little backwards on that. But it's just the two of them flipping spaces. I think that it's a great signing for the Mariners. I think it's a great way to bolster that rotation. But I know you have a little insight into this whole pitcher free agency thing.
I mean, I totally thought Ray was going to go back to Toronto with this year he had. But I still think that Ray and Gausman both got overpaid.
Speaking of overpaid.
I mean, I think it was just more of the years for me. I mean, Robbie Ray's been an all-star once in his career, and it wasn't even this year. It was 2017. And he's just, I mean, 2020 in Arizona, he had a 7.80 ERA. In Toronto, he had a 4.7. You even look at 2019, the guy had a 4.3 ERA. He's a workhorse, but he's just not consistent enough to give him that kind of money.
I totally agree. And with Gausman, too, it's like, I remember him in his days with the Orioles. He was always good. He was never great. He moved around a little bit after that. I think he went to Atlanta at the trade deadline in 2018, and he was okay there. He had a pretty poor season in 2019, though.
Yeah, 2019.
It was bad.
I remember he had such a rough year, he got traded halfway through to Cincinnati.
And it's just, you can't give that big money. And don't get me wrong, I think it's a good signing. I just think they paid too much. I think that Gausman will fit really well with the Jays. I think that Ray will fit really well with the Mariners. I just don't think that they deserve the money they got. And I think in general with pitchers, they get a little bit overpaid. I remember when I heard the news about Garrett Cole signing with the Yankees, I was confused, to put it lightly, because he was just getting paid to pitch every fifth day, and he was getting $300 million. It just seemed like too much for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is AAV. I mean, both Ray and Gausman are going to be making over $20 million a year, and I just... There's some, like, you look at some previous contracts that just haven't worked out for pitchers. Like, I mean, even for an example with the Red Sox, I know it's a bad one, is Chris Sale. I mean, the guy signed a 5-year extension in 2017, I want to say, for around the same. It was a little bit more. It was 145. But, I mean, you don't know with injuries nowadays. A lot of guys get Tommy John, miss a full year. I mean, and guys with that, just that inconsistency, I don't see why you'd pay him that much.
speaking of inconsistency, I'm going to jump over to consistency with Max Scherzer, because that dude's been consistent for so long. I know we've talked about him in the NL Cy Young, but his signing with the Mets, another one that came out of nowhere for me. I saw him going back to the Dodgers and trying to win another one for LA, but the Mets?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised with the Mets. I thought he was going to end up back on the Dodgers. I mean, especially with the Mookie trade, I've heard so many things about how the Dodgers just treat their players right. I knew I had a hot take that Max Scherzer was going to break the AAV for a pitcher, which he did. He got $43.3 million, which was a huge number, but I didn't think 200 was out of the possibility.
But on the topic of his earnings, one of the funniest things I've seen in a while is the fact that Scherzer's also going to get paid $15 million this year by the Nationals, because they are now going to be paying him $15 million to pitch against them. And that is something that it's just comical to see.
Yeah, it's a wild stat to see that. So he's going to get in total this year $58 million from the Mets and the Nationals.
And with him going to the Mets, it's going to create the most dominant 1-2, right? Him and Jacob DeGoat. It's insane.
There's not an argument against it. If they stay healthy all year, that's two wins every 5 days.
I mean, since 2018, top two leaders in ERA, DeGrom with a 1.94, which is, first of all, that's absurd. But Scherzer with a 2.74, those are top two. The other three on that list, Buehler, Cole, Kershaw.
Yeah, I mean, it's an exceptional list. I mean, but if you have two guys that have led the league in ERA for over a 3-4 year span, it's scary.
The NL East needs to be scared.
Yeah.
Even the Braves. I know they won the series, but they need to be scared of that rotation.
I mean, the New York Mets, I mean, not even rotation. Their problem in the past was just, trying to score runs. And, I mean, they went out there and, what was it, Black Friday? Went out there and signed Starling Marte, Mark Cano, and Eduardo Escobar. I mean,
the Marte deal is something that I actually want to focus on a little bit. Because Starling Marte came out of nowhere this year, it seemed. Like, we all knew he was a good player back in his time with the Pirates alongside Gregory Polanco and McCutcheon. Like, he was always good. I know his batting average was never, rocketing. It was around, the 280, 290 mark. But this year, I think in his time with the A's, he was hitting over 315. And it was just something that really just came out of the blue after the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, even in 2020, he had that stint in Arizona before he got traded, but he had a really good stint in 2020. I mean, looking at the numbers here, .311 batting average, .827 OPS. I mean, the guy he only hit two home runs, but you didn't need him to hit homers. I mean,
in 33 games in that shortened season, two bombs, I know it's not a huge number, but it's still just impressive that he hit so well, and nobody was giving him the audience that he really deserved, and I think he got that with the A's.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, I mean, you get him out there, you haven't played defense and haven't played small ball, he hits 10, 15 home runs a year, that's a plus, that's a major plus.
And he's good in small ball situations. It's something that I remember the Pirates back in the early 2010s were really preaching with him and McCutcheon in the middle of that lineup. And then they had, who was it, Pedro Alvarez in that four slot, just hitting nukes or striking out. It was a fun offense to watch.
Yeah, it really was.
But staying with the Mets free agency, Eduardo Escobar, too.
I think that was a big sign for the Mets. I mean, their third baseman last year was J.D. Davis, I believe. I mean, just looking at his numbers, I mean, he was a switch hitter who hit 30 bombs. I mean, that's just unheard of nowadays.
That conversation is limited to two other guys, and it's Lindor and Jose Ramirez, really.
Yeah, this guy has really come on the scene the last few years. He's put up 35 bombs one year in 2019, just not too far in the past, last full season. But, I mean, this guy he hits. I mean, he might not be the best in the field. You might not be the biggest free agent signing you were looking for, but I think he's a underrated player.
I think it's a sleeper for signing of the year. That could really bolster that offense. It's gonna be a problem to have both of those switch hitters, Lindor and Escobar, in that infield in the middle of that lineup. It's gonna be something to behold for sure. Queens should be happy about that one.
Yeah, I mean, Queens in general should be very happy. I mean, they filled out their infield. I mean, I know they didn't get Javi back. He ended up going to Detroit. But, I mean, you got Jeff McNeil that can play second. You got Kanaan
in the outfield.
Outfield with Marte. I mean,
Pete Alonso's still going to hit nukes from first base.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one big thing they missed out on was their second baseman, middle infielder. I mean, I think they had their chance. I mean, even if you just bounce around a little bit here, but if you look at Semien, I mean, he didn't get that big of a contract. I know 7 years is a long time, and he's 31 years old, I believe, but...
The Semien's just been unreal the past few years. I think he finished third in MVP voting this year, third a couple of years ago also. People seem to forget that. I think he played a full 162 with the A's.
Yeah, he's a durable guy.
And, like, he doesn't get hurt. He hits nukes. He plays a solid second base. I know that was an issue when he first came up, was he wasn't the greatest fielder. But now he's coming to his own at second base, and he just hits the ball out of the park. It's something... He broke the record, didn't he, for most home runs by a second baseman?
I believe so. I mean, I remember even in 19, I was so mad when he finished in front of Xander Bogaerts for third in MVP. I mean, but he just had better season. I mean, he didn't drive in as many runs. But the guy just, he's just durable, and he just plays. He's the guy you want. He's a workhorse. I mean, guy's a baller.
And his counterpart in signing, though. Corsier.
I had him going to Texas the whole way.
I thought he was going back to LA. I had a little mix up with which Dodger was gonna go to Texas. I thought it was gonna be Kershaw, which I guess could still happen, but we gotta wait a little bit because of this lockout. But Seager's contract was $325 million from the Rangers, right? And I saw a post on Instagram the other day that in order for the Dodgers to match the offer for the Rangers, they would have had to shell out $401 million because of California state income tax.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing with teams nowadays. I mean, California, even the Yankees, like, that income taxes and stuff like that, players take into account. I mean, but I saw Seager going to Texas for another reason outside of money. I mean, I thought just, like, I could see him in a Rangers uniform, and they had a few of the coaches from the Dodgers a few years ago, and just I saw it coming.
And we also know he loves to hit in that new stadium. Oh yeah, we saw it in the COVID playoffs when he got the opportunity to hit solely in that stadium, and boy did he make the most of it. That was a great run in the playoffs, and I think he's just trying to get that comfortability that he had in there and just keep it for a full 81 home games. And I'm scared to see what that middle infield is going to do. That could feasibly be an 80 home run and 200 RBI middle infield.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the AL West shapes out. I mean, you got the A's, who are always a contender, the Astros, who are just coming off a World Series loss. I mean, even the Angels. I mean, they brought back Rafael Iglesias as their closer. They still got Shohei Ohtani pitching and hitting. They got Mike Trout, who will be coming back from injury. They got rid of Pujols, so they still have some money to spend if they want to get. They should get more pitching.
Don't forget about Syndergaard and Aaron Loop coming in.
Yeah,
poaching the Mets, but I think those deals are gonna be huge for them because we've seen the Angels hit. Jared Walsh hits. Mike Trout hits. Shohei Ohtani hits and pitches, but the pitching has just been abysmal for them, really. I think that there was maybe 1 year where Bundy, his first year in the Angels uniform, was decent, but then he sucked again this year. It was like he was on the Orioles again. Yeah. And let's not forget about Anthony Rendon being in that lineup. If he can get back into the form, they will hit the ball.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to see how this ends up. I mean, they got David Fletcher there, too, who's a good bat.
One of the greatest contact hitters in the game right now.
You got, like we said, multiple times, Rendon, Trout, Ohtani. You can see Joe Adell breaking out this year. He's a sleeper, though. He's a guy you want to watch. I mean, Max Stassi, he's even a guy that I like watching him play.
And going back to David Fletcher, the dude just smacks the ball. It's it's something kind of Ichiro-y in his swing. He just slaps at the ball and it finds a spot to land. I know his average wasn't the greatest this year, but during the COVID season, he was really good.
Yeah, he's just one of those guys that you want in the leadoff spot. He doesn't strike out. He's going to put the ball in play. He's the definition of, like, little league small ball. Put the ball in play and make the other team make errors. And he sure plays that game well.
In other sorts of free agency news, I know Buxton signed that that big extension. And I think, going back to what we've been saying about pitchers, I think Buxton, you can't count on that longevity. He seems like he gets hurt every year. This year, he had a fantastic start of the season, and then he fell off a cliff because he broke himself in half. It seems like every year, he's just getting hurt, put on the IL for 60, and then it's another 60 a week later after he comes back.
Yeah, he's an interesting player. I mean, he's one of those guys that if he could play a full season, he would be really good. And I can see why the Twins want to keep him there long term, 7 years, $100 million. But I mean, he's played over 100 games in one season. That was back in 2017. I mean, he just can't stay healthy.
It's an issue, and you can't pay a guy that much money if he's just gonna play 30 some games. You can't have it. But with that in mind, another extension that kind of got my gears going is Wander Franco. The guy got paid so much money. He's played 70 MLB games in his career, and he now has the 18th largest contract in the sport's history. That's too much.
I don't know. I'm happy the Rays actually paid Wander Franco. I mean,
I think they should have paid him. Don't get me wrong. But I think that it's the same thing with that Tatis contract from last year. It's that you can't trust that longevity when you've only seen him play a fraction of a season. I just don't trust it.
I mean, I think he's one of the best young players in baseball. I mean, he was the number one prospect. He's, once again, a switch hitter who hit 290. He's not going to put the ball out the yard that much, but he's a way above average fielder. I mean, he's above average hitter with a 130 OPS plus. I think, and he was only 20 years old. He hasn't even turned 21 yet. I mean, the guy he's one of those players that you know he's going to be something special. And I think the Rays saw that and they want to keep him there for a long time.
If they do stay in the trap, I could see him getting some short porch homers in that corner, though. We saw it a couple times this year. So I wouldn't be surprised if he does put a few more balls than we're expecting out in that little corner.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, though, he had a short period of games. I believe it was only like 70, 75, but he only hit, let's look at this, 7 homers. I mean, still, you double that up, that's 14, 15 homers a year, even more. I mean,
and the RBIs also aren't there, but the dude's going to be a top-of-the-order guy, one or two, get on base, score runs, but
steal bases.
I just don't see that kind of contract really being worth it, because you're paying him so much, and you've seen him in the league for I think just under a half a season.
Yeah, he's going to be an interesting player to see in coming years.
Go ahead.
Oh, you're on you.
I was just going to segue into the next free agency, the next free agency topic, which isn't even free agency, it's a trade topic, though. And I know you have some feelings on this. JBJ back to the Sox. How you feel, Matt?
Yeah, this broke last night, and I was really getting ready to go to bed, and I saw the trade. And you can ask my roommate, Benny. I screamed. I was so in shock that we traded away Hunter Renfro. And then when I found out the return was Jackie Bradley, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Jackie. He's the best defensive center fielder I have ever seen. But he just didn't hit last year at all. I mean, the guy hit 160. Like,
it's a weird return considering Renfro being a great defensive player and a great offensive player.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I've seen the Red Sox getting called the Tampa Bay North for a while now. I mean, I think it was just Heim Bloom buying prospects. I mean, I think he saw Hunter Renfro's standout season. He knew that production is probably not going to happen again with 30 bombs, but
mean, but you're not getting that production from Jackie Bradley.
Yeah, but I mean, the guy, Hunter Renfrow, disappeared in the playoffs. He was a non-factor at the end of the year. He's kind of like Jackie, but a little bit better. He's just a streaky hitter with a good glove and good arm.
Streaky hitters, for sure. I actually have a story about Hunter Renfrow. The last 8 games I've seen him play live, he's hit a bomb. And this dates back years when I saw him play. He was on the Padres, and he was playing the Orioles at Camden Yards. Like, the dude hits bombs when I show up. So, Hunter Renfrow, if you are listening to this, give me some tickets to some Brewers games, because you'll hit a bomb, I promise you.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of the most exciting players to watch for the Red Sox last year. He was a middle-of-the-lineup guy. Like I said, 31 bombs, 260. But, he was just...
He was hitting in big moments in the regular season. But in the playoffs, you said it, he disappeared. The man was gone. He was a non-factor. And it's something you can't really have for a continual contender like the Sox.
Yeah, the big thing that was underrated with him was his glove. I mean, us out here in Boston, we're spoiled with Jackie Bradley and Mookie Betts, and even Andrew Benintendi have all won gold gloves in that 2018 year, and we've had them since 14, 15, 16. We've been spoiled with defense in the outfield, and we traded them all away. We didn't see the defense coming from Kike Hernandez, Hunter Renfrow. We just did not see that defense and arm coming. I mean, they led the league in putouts, I believe, from the outfield, those two. They were just a stellar outfield duo.
Hunter Renfrow's arm is something to behold. Not only is he just a swole dude, but he throws the ball.
Yeah, I remember, I think I posted the thing on picture on Twitter last night, where he was gunning some out and pointed the gun at third base and then fired it. It was an electric moment having him out in the outfield.
I mean, JBJ does have that arm, though. I've seen him throw balls out of stadiums. So it's really just all about the lack of bat for JBJ in that trade. I feel like the return there, I like the trade. I think it helps both teams. But I just feel like the Red Sox kind of got the short end of the stick there.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote an article about it earlier today. I think, once again, it was high and boom buying prospects. Like, the guys we got, one was a third-round pick last year out of Louisville. He had a big bat, hit over 300 in his first professional season. And the other guy was a middle infielder with speed, which always can help having a little extra speed. I mean, look at Jaron Duran. We love speed here in Boston. I mean, Jacoby Ellsbury, Coco Crisp, those
Jacoby
guys.
Ellsbury.
Those guys, they did good here, but when they left, they weren't great. But, I mean, even what I see with the Jackie Bradley trade is we're opening up an outfield spot. Even, like, I could see Kyle Schwarber coming back. He's been linked. I just think that, like, we had 3 outfield spots set in stone coming into this year. Now that Renfrow's gone, I could see Kyle Schwarber coming back, playing left, sliding Doogie over to right. Even if we put Kike at second, we put Jackie in center, I wouldn't be mad.
Another idea, just, you know, shooting an idea out there, is with that outfield spot open, there's guys still on the market. Obviously can't do that right now with the lockout, but guys like Castellanos, you could stick him in the outfield. Bryant, you can stick in the outfield. I know it's not the best defensive outfielder, but imagine a Chris Bryant in that lineup too. That's just, so I know you getting excited about that idea.
So I actually have a hot take about this. We saw Castellanos, great year. Bryant, great year. Those two players have something very similar. They've both called the friendly confines of Wrigley Field home before. I don't think the Cubs are done. They signed Marcus Stroman a few days ago. That was a surprise signing out of nowhere.
That was something that surprised everybody. I'm an Orioles fan through and through, but my dad is from Chicago, so I've grown up liking the Cubs, and that is something I have not seen anywhere. I saw a few tweets here and there, but when I saw him tweet that he's going to Wrigley, that's something that took me by surprise.
Yeah, I was very shocked myself. I mean, they just traded away everyone at the end of last year, had the lowest payroll in years. It looked like they were going to just try and rebuild from the ground up. Traded for Nick Madrigal from the White Sox. And then they came out here and signed Marcus Stroman. Now look a few pieces away from being a playoff contender again. I mean, you got Stroman as your ace. You got Wilson Contreras still there.
Kyle Hendricks still there, too. You can't forget about the professor.
Yeah, I mean, even like looking at bats, you go around the infield, you got Wisdom, you got Schwindel.
Two very young, very exciting guys, I might say.
And Horner and Madrigal are also young and exciting. I mean, even if you threw Wisdom out in the outfield and left field, I believe he played a few games out there, you could sign Trevor Story or someone. And then you got...
Then you really got a piece to contend in the NL Central. Maybe not for a World Series, but you could contend for a playoff spot.
Most definitely.
And if they are to sign a guy like Story, Ab Castellanos out there, back in the outfields, maybe bring Bryant back.
Even Schwarber is a form... like. I know it feels like ancient history, but Schwarber was a Cub. He was
You bring those guys in. That's a scary lineup, and it's something that I think a lot of Cubs fans are really excited to see. What the new front office is gonna do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if the Cubs actually continue to pay people, or if they're just gonna slowly add. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's a pretty solid free agent class even next year. So even if they don't grab all the big names this year, and like few, if we even grab like one, like a Castellanos or just a Trevor Story, I mean,
it's a formidable option for them, really, and they're not going to get scoffed at like they did at the end of last year.
Yeah, it's really going to be fun to look forward to.
And, you know, talking about the other options they have in free agency, let's look at the guys that are still out there real fast, because obviously, we said Castellanos, but Story is still out there. We really don't know where he's going to go, because I had him going to the Rangers, but that's not looking like an option right now. I know for a fact he's not going back to the Rockies.
I don't know. I mean, I've seen Colorado's expressed an interest in him. I could totally see him going back to Colorado.
He hated it there. I just couldn't see that.
Where I see Trevor Story right now is the Astros. I don't think they want to pay Carlos Correa. I think they want to go a cheaper route. I mean, he's still a guy that hits bombs and has a good glove, and I think he would fit in really well in the middle of that lineup.
And another thing is that Story did kind of have an off year last year, so they could get a little discount on him. Obviously not too much, because the dude is still a great ball player. But the down season last year will definitely hurt those contract talks.
I mean, 29 years old, I could see him signing a shorter term. I mean, Seager was 28 and he got a 10-year deal. Javi was 29 and got a 6-year deal. I don't think he'll even go that long. I could see a 3-4-year deal. Guy gets $25 million a pop, and I could see it happening.
Another thing that I was thinking about the other day is I could totally see him going to whoever, be it a Dodgers or an Astros even, or maybe even a team like the Cubs, and being like, give me a prove it year. 1-year contract.
And Josh Donaldson, like.
Exactly. To prove that he can actually, that he can really show out at the MLB level.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Donaldson did that in 2019, signed a 1-year contract with Atlanta after getting traded from Toronto. Guy hit 37 bombs, finished 11th MVP voting, got himself a big contract in Minnesota, so.
Which they're living to regret right now, though.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking to rebuild. I mean, they trade away Brios and stole Austin Martin and Simeon, I don't know how to say his name, Woods Richardson. They got some prospects coming up the system there.
Yeah, but going back to the remaining free agents, I know the big one that everybody's talking about is Freddie Freeman. What's going to happen with him? I think he's going back to the Braves. I don't see why not. He's only asking for $160 million over 5 years. I could totally see it happening.
I would be shocked if the Braves didn't pay him. I know the Yankees have come in recent time. And just.
I heard the Dodgers a couple days ago were thinking about it. But he's a Brave.
He is Mr. Brave.
He's a hero. I don't think that there were many people that weren't happy for Freddie Freeman winning a ring. The only real reason I wanted the Braves to like really win, the only reason I was so steadfast in that, was because I wanted to see Freddie win one. I wanted Frederick to get a ring.
Yeah, no, I was happy for Freddie to get a ring finally. I mean, just a good guy.
Him and his best friend now both have rings, but you know, Rizzo did strike out Freddie Freeman this year, so that clearly makes him a better player. But Rizzo, another guy still in free agency.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him going back to New York if they don't land Olsen. He's an interesting player. I could even see him coming to Boston on a 1-2-year deal as a segue into Tristan Cassis. But it'll be interesting. I mean, even if the A's trade away Olsen, I could see them signing Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, there's a lot of places I think Rizzo fits. He's a great glove. He's a consistent bat. and it's a consistent lefty bat, and he's just a great warehouse guy. To just have him in the clubhouse, it's just a real pleasure. I've seen. You got a guy running at you, screaming Frederick in the middle of a pickle. That's always going to be a benefit to the clubhouse.
Yeah, he certainly lifts spirits in the Cubs locker room. He even looked like he helped out the Yankees at the beginning of the year. Or when he got traded, I should say.
Beginning of his tenure, yeah. And then Schwarber, another former Cub. I know you've said that you want him. Want him back in Boston.
I want Kyle from Waltham back in his home city.
The dude hits dingers. Yeah. It's pretty much all he seems to do nowadays. I remember everybody was laughing at that fielding blunder in the playoffs. But, I mean, there was that stretch with the Nationals midway through the season before he got hurt, where, what was it, like 12 home runs in 10 games?
Yeah, I mean, he finished the year with 32 home runs in 113 games.
That's a game. It's every third game he's hitting a bomb. That's pretty freaking crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I went to a few games this end of the season just watching my Sox, and he hits some mammoth shots that, I mean, the wall out there near the bullpen's 380 feet, and he was pimping it like it was gone outside of the stadium. Like, some people thought it was going to hit the Prudential. Like, it was unreal how far he hit some balls. In
fact, they go. I wouldn't be surprised if he hits if he comes back and hits a few over the monster just because. The dude hits the ball, and he is pretty good at spraying it, too. He'll hit lasers to the other way.
Yeah, it was interesting even with the Red Sox. I mean, he came in here and hit in the leadoff spot, and he had a .435 on-base percentage with us. I mean, the guy just, not only does he hit bombs, but he knows what pitches to take and what pitches to swing at. He's a really selective hitter. I know Bobby Dalbec talked about being with him all the time and how it helped him become more selective, one of the guys that struck out the most on the team. So I'd love to see him back, not only for his bat and him playing outfield or first base, wherever we put him, but even helping develop younger guys with Tristan Casas coming up and Jeter Downs coming up, guys who are free swingers. Like, love to see him talk to Schwarber and learn about selective hitting.
It's still weird to me to think of Schwarber as a veteran guy. I remember him coming up as a catcher, of all things, in the Cubs organization. He couldn't catch, so they put him in the outfield. He had that fantastic 2016 postseason, even after the very unfortunate, second game of the season ACL injury.
Yeah.
And then he came into the playoffs and was a huge part of that World Series run for the Cubs. But it's just weird to think of him as a vet now. I mean, he's, coming up on his age 29 season now? And
even if he's older.
In my head, he's still a 24-year-old kid coming straight out of the minors. Staying with these postseason teams and free agency, I think that a big signing that nobody's really gonna think of as a big signing until he goes off is Conforto to the Stros. I think he's gonna go to the Stros, and I think it's gonna be a great fit. I think having those two lefty bats in the lineup, I know Conforto had a down season, but him and Brantley in the same lineup with Altuve in the middle, they're gonna be missing their big bat in Correa because he's not going back, I don't think. But I think that I could conceivably see a huge year for Conforto if he signs for Houston.
I'm so interested in Conforto. I was confused on why he turned down the qualifying offer when the Mets offered him it. I just can't see him in another uniform. It's just an interesting guy. I mean, I don't see a spot for him in the Astros outfield. I mean,
I think it's a fight for your spot kind of deal when he signs, because hopefully I'll get one of these predictions right. But I think it'll be a fight for your spot, and I could just see him DHing, honestly. I know that Yordan Alvarez kind of has that spot locked down, but you could teach Yordan how to play first base, trade away Gurriel maybe, or even just trade away somebody still in that outfield. I know Kyle Tucker got the second team All MLB, which, first of all, I don't agree with. That's another story.
Cedric Mullins.
Don't get me started, Matt. But I just think Conforto could really get that prove. I think he could prove himself in Houston. I know that it's a crowded outfield, but I could totally see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking at a list of teams. One team I could see him going to is Seattle. I mean, I could see a bunch of guys linked to Seattle, but I can see him and Kyle Lewis next to each other. Just
see with Seattle, I've gone with a different take. I think they're bringing back Nelly Cruz. Nelly Cruz back to the Mariners, fill out that DH spot. Not only does that solidify that middle of the lineup for them, but it gives them that veteran presence that I don't really think they have. Like, they don't have a ton of old vets, and I think that Nelly Cruz in that lineup could and in the clubhouse could really help out. He could help out hitters like Abraham Toro, who kind of came onto the scene last year more with the Astros than the Mariners, but he could help him. Ty France coming up.
Dylan Moore's a young guy. J.P. Crawford.
And Kelnick, I think that could be a huge help for him. And obviously you have Haniger. He's, like, Haniger's a vet guy too. But I just think that Nelly Cruz going back to Seattle would be a huge move for them, and I think it would help them all a lot.
Yeah, I could totally see him DHing there.
And we know how much Nelly Cruz likes to move around, so I don't think he's staying put.
Yeah, that is, it's an interesting person to watch. I mean, I completely forgot he was a free agent.
It's the old guys. They always sneak up on you.
He's one of those guys that just don't age. He just keeps hitting bombs year after year.
I remember back in the day, we as in the Orioles, decided to sign a guy, you might know him, Chris Davis. Yeah, we signed him instead of Nelly Cruz because our owners thought that Nelson Cruz was too old and he was going to go downhill very fast.
Yeah, Davis worked out for a few years.
Davis worked out for a year, and now he's out of the league, and Nelly Cruz is still going to get a big contract. Not a long-term contract, but he's still going to get money because the dude just hits, and it seems like he'll hit until he's 50.
Yeah, I mean, he's a surefire Hall of Famer in my book.
He has to be. That was a real smooth one right there. So, Hall of Fame. A conversation that everybody has every year.
Ballots just came out, so of course, me and Ezra had to fill out our ballots. And let me tell you, they are quite the opposite.
They're pretty different. I think we have, what, 2-3 guys the same, and that's it? Prince Fielder, David Ortiz, Billy Wagner.
That's the only 3 we have the same.
And I think those are pretty surefire. I think that if David Ortiz doesn't get in first ballot, it's a shame. It's just unfair. I think that Billy Wagner not getting in last year was blasphemous. I think he's the third best closer of all time.
He's up there.
It goes Mo Rivera, obviously number one, Hoffman number two, and I think Billy Wagner's up there at 3. I think the argument can be made for guys like Gagne, but I remember doing some research a couple years ago when I saw Billy Wagner on the ballot. I'm like, who's this Billy Wagner guy? Because I never saw him play live. And the dude shoved. He got outs. And I didn't know of him for a long time. And it's a shame that I didn't, because the dude was a great pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, 422 career saves, career 2.3 ERA. I mean, he just, former Red Sox, I mean, but.
I mean, how many years did he play? 16 years, and he walked a total of, what, 300 batters? That's pretty.
300 walks and 903 innings pitched.
That's something that you don't really see very often. So, Billy Wagner, I think he's got to be, right? He's got to be.
Yeah, I mean, Billy Wagner, I have him as my number 4 closer of all time, but.
Who do you have at number 3?
I got K-Rod.
I can respect that. I do think K-Rod's one of the most underrated guys of all time. That dude could pitch.
Yeah, I mean, and then the next guy we both have is David Ortiz. I mean, 541 career homers, 10-time All-Star, 3-time World Series champion.
I don't think there's any arguments against it. One of the most iconic players in Red Sox history, and that's saying something.
Yeah, he's definitely on the Mount Rushmore for the Red Sox. I mean, led the league in home runs, led the league in RBIs, multiple years, actually.
I mean, the guy got an eye, too. He had a great eye during the middle of his career, more so, I feel like. But he had a couple of years where I think he led the league in walks, too.
In he had a few years. He OPS, let's see, from 2005 to 2007, his OPS was over one every year. He finished MVP voting from 2003 to 2007, fifth, fourth, second, third, fourth. I mean, the guy was just a monster.
The fact that he didn't win an MVP in his career is pretty shocking to me, but it's I gotta blame it on him being a DH. You don't see the DHs get a ton of those awards anyways.
I mean, he's one of the best, probably the second best DH of all time. I mean, not only could he hit for power, he could hit for average. I mean, he had a few years over in the 310s, 320s.
I mean, end of his career, he hit 315 his last season.
Yeah, that was a farewell tour and a half.
That is an understatement. And then the last guy that we have in common on our lists, Prince Fielder. Another big guy, another big bopper who could actually put the ball in play anyways. One of my favorite clips in All-Star Game history has got to be the Prince Fielder triple.
One of my favorite clips of all time is not even the triple. I mean, my mom references this all the time. It's not even an in-game moment, but when he was going for a foul ball, missed it, and stole fans' nachos. I mean, the guy was just all around, like, enjoyed playing the game, put up big numbers. I mean, he was just one of those players that as a kid, when you were watching him, you wanted to be like him. I mean, he was durable. He barely missed years from injury. I mean, games from injury. I mean,
it's really a shame that he had to retire so early, because that was really the only big injury he ever sustained in his career. There was years where he played all 162. He was an Iron Man, and I don't think anybody really ever gave him the credit for it. But he was also producing in those seasons.
Yeah, he was really good.
But on to the guys that we don't agree on.
I'll let you go first.
So, I have a take here, and it's about Bonds, Clemens, Rodriguez, and Schilling. All guys that Matt has on his ballot.
I do have them all going into the Hall of Fame.
All I don't have on my ballot. And here's why. Cheaters. And I know Bonds is easily one of the best players of all time. Clemens, one of the best pitchers of all time. Rodriguez, one of the best players of all time. Schilling, fantastic pitcher, deserves to be in the Hall of Fame on merit alone. But it's just, I can't let any of these guys into the Hall of Fame until Pete Rose is in. He's been banned indefinitely from the Hall of Fame because of some gambling issues. Michael Jordan's in the Hall of Fame. Pete Rose deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. As soon as he does, I will concede that Bonds, Clemens, Rodriguez, Schilling all deserve to be there. Because they do on stats, but just because of Pete Rose.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I mean, I agree Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame, but I mean, I think to start off, you got to set a precedent of letting these guys in the Hall of Fame. I mean, a lot of these voters, they see steroids and they don't want to let him in because they cheated, but I mean, sad to say it, but it's not the good guy Hall of Fame. It's a baseball museum. I mean, you gotta let these guys in. They're the greatest of all time. I mean, they're just some of the best players to ever play the game. Not even of their generation, just the best to ever play the game. I mean, I think if you want to get more people in, like you said, Pete Rose, you want him to start, but I think if you want Pete Rose in, you have to let these guys in first.
I could see that, but I in good merits, I can't do that. I can't put that vote down until Pete Rose is in. And it might be contradicting myself, like you said, but it's my morals, and I'm going to stick by them. Speaking of sticking by, Todd Helton. He's on my ballot. He stuck by those Rockies. He was Mr. Rocky for so long. And he was just so good. There was one year, I think it was 2000, where I don't understand how he didn't win the MVP. He wasn't even top three, and he led the league in average, OBP, slugging, OPS, obviously. RBIs, he almost had 150. He had 40-plus bombs that year, 200-plus hits, and almost 60 doubles. He had 59. That's one of my biggest robberies. I think he should have won that MVP. But back to the point of him being in the Hall of Fame. The dude was so consistent. He played until he was 39, And, you know, the last two seasons of his career were admittedly not his best, but he was hitting 300 pretty much every year of his career until then. He had a run from, looking at the stats, 1998 until, I think it was 2008, which is a full 10 years of always over 300 batting average.
Yeah,
over 400 OBP in most of those seasons, too. A slugging almost 600 or more than 600 all those seasons. Those are MVP numbers, and that's why I think he's got to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he was quite the player. I haven't really dove deep into his stats. I actually didn't have him on my ballot, but looking at these numbers, I mean, he was a pretty good player. I think the one thing that concerns me a little bit is just how early he kind of sort of fell off in his career. I mean, he went from 32 bombs to 20 at age 30 and fell off and just never hit over 20 bombs again. So
it's I understand that. I think that it's weird that he dropped off so fast. I think, you know, there's a lot of reasons. I'm not going to speculate that could have happened. But, like, it's really the average and the consistency in hitting not just bombs, but he was just hitting the ball. And I know he only ever won a few gold gloves, but he was so good in the field. He was a staple of that Rockies team for years. So I really just, I don't see why he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, then I know most people are not going to agree with me on this one, but I have Jimmy Rollins in the Hall of Fame. I put him on my vote. I mean, the guy, he was a staple of the Phillies when they were coming up, and they won the World Series in 2008. I mean, he won the MVP in 2007, multiple gold gloves, silver slugger. I mean, the guy who just all around was one of those players that, like, I love, like a Trey Turner type, where he'll hit for average, he'll give you 20 bombs a year, he'll give you 30 stolen bases a year. I mean, he was just an all-around player, and just the fact that he won an MVP, that put him over the top for me. I mean, three-time All-Star, World Series champion once again. I think he was the heart and soul of that Phillies team for a long time, and I think that he deserves a vote to the Hall of Fame.
I think that he has a valid case. I don't have him on mine, but, you know, hearing you talk about it, I think I could see him getting in. But one thing that I think is really just, I think something that's given a lot of attention that I don't think is fully deserved is the awards. I think you just got, like, I know there are guys who are, you know, award merchants, so to say. They just get, like, a gold glove, and everybody's like, oh my god, they're so good, they have so many gold gloves. But with Rollins, I feel like it's the opposite. He doesn't have all of those awards. Yes, he has the MVP, but only three All-Star games, I don't really think fully encompasses how good of a player he was. Because I do remember growing up and seeing him. I went to a lot of Phillies games because it's close proximity to Baltimore, and the man was just electric on the field. He walked so guys like Tatis could run.
Yeah, I mean, he going back to the hardware, I mean, he competed against some tough guys. I mean, you had Hanley Ramirez, who was still playing shortstop for Florida in the National League, Jose Reyes, Troy Tulowitzki. He had some, even a Brandon Phillips, who was a second baseman, but still a middle infielder. He had some guys he had to compete against for some of that hardware. So I can see where he didn't get as much of it and why players wouldn't really vote for him, or the voters wouldn't really vote for him. But I still think that he was one of the best players of the generation. And watching that 2008 Phillies team with Utley and Rollins and Victorino and Worth and Howard, and it was just some of the best baseball I think I've ever seen in my life.
And another guy that we have a bit of a disagreement on our ballot is Andrew Jones. The second Jones in that dynamic duo in Atlanta during those years, the late 90s, early 2000s. Didn't even realize that he was playing until 2012, now that I'm looking at the stats. But the guy was consistently in MVP voting. He was a fantastic fielder, which is another thing I think is overlooked a lot in the Hall of Fame voting. He only did win one silver slugger, but I think what really puts him over the top for me with his, you know, I wouldn't say his numbers are the greatest hitting-wise. I mean, 254 career average, but 434 bombs, almost 1,300 RBIs. He was slugging nearly 500 on his career. His WAR ended at 62.7, which I think is pretty impressive for a guy that was, you know, just as good as he was. I don't think he ever really got the glory that I think he deserves. But it's really those playoffs. In the playoffs, the dude showed up. It was clutch situations. And he just hit bombs when it mattered. I think it was in 1996. He was also a child at the time. He hit two bombs in the World Series. I know they ended up losing to the Yankees, pardon me.
I wish they lost to the Sox.
I know you do. But he was coming up in big moments. He hit 400 in that World Series. In the NLCS against Florida in 97, he hit 444. The 2001 NLDS against the Astros, he hit 500. Like, he hit in the playoffs. His last playoff series, in the National League at least, was against also the Astros in 2005 in the NLDS. In the 2004 and 5 NLDS, they lost to the Astros, and he hit 526 in 2004 and 471 in 2005. Those playoff numbers are indescribably good.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what got me to push him into the Hall of Fame. It's just impressive what the dude could do when it came down to it.
Yeah, he was definitely on the fence for me. I mean, he was, looking at his numbers, he is one of the most interesting players that I've ever seen. I mean, great fielder, 10 gold gloves, won the player of the year 1 year. But like you said, I mean, if you look at his numbers, it's just like he had a streak of 30 bombs, 25 bombs. He had 1 year with 50. I mean, he was an interesting player. I think the thing that was with me is he was a bomb or nothing guy. He hit home runs or he had a lot of strikeouts.
He was a stereotypical 2021 type of hitter before that was the trend.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you could make an argument that that's why he should be. He changed the game, but strikeouts, I hate that type of play, honestly. The strikeout or bust kind of guy, the home run or bust kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, looking at his numbers, he only had 150 more hits than strikeouts, which is unreal.
It is crazy to think about, but it's like the numbers are good. They're not great, but it's those playoff numbers and the consistency in the field through his entire career that really just had me stuck on the ability. Like, how could you not choose him? And there's one other guy that I have on my ballot, and I'm gonna admit I didn't do a ton of research into it, but I gotta put Torrey Hunter in the Hall of Fame. He was one of my favorite players growing up, and the dude played for so long. What was it, 19 years? And I know he never won any huge awards. Like, he got a bunch of gold gloves, I think a few silver sluggers in there. But he was just my favorite player, so I have to put him on the ballot. He was so fun to watch. His smile, loved it. It was infectious. And I don't think people really remember how good he actually was. I know his average never really peaked over that 300 mark, but it was consistently in that 270-280 range. His slugging numbers were always good. His OPS was pretty consistently over that 800 mark, and he was just an iconic player, really. Though, like, sometimes in bad ways, though. The missed home run robbery in that playoff series against the Sox into the bullpen. But I just had to put him. I couldn't do it to myself to not put him on there. Just as a guy and as a consistent dude, I had to put him in my Hall of Fame ballot.
Yeah, I mean, as a Sox fan, I mostly remember him for that 2013-2014 years with the Detroit Tigers. I mean, he had pretty solid years. I remember him with the Angels, too. I always remember him as a pretty good player, but I don't know if he was ever good enough to put him into the Hall of Fame for me, at least.
I mean, it's reasonable. His numbers were never the greatest, and I wouldn't disagree with you, but I just because of, like, he was one of the guys that really got me into baseball. So I had to put him on my ballot.
Yeah. One guy I want to talk about before we wrap up here is Andy Pettitte. I mean, he was on the fence for me. I didn't use all 10 of my votes, but he was really close. I mean, Yankee for most of his career. He spent a few years in Houston. I know he took 20. He was out all of 2011. But, I mean, he had a 3.8 career ERA, 250 wins, which I know nowadays isn't the most best thing, the best stat to look at, but back in the past, I mean, 250 wins, 150 losses. He was getting the Yankees wins every year. He was a pretty solid pitcher.
And you got to look at those workhorse numbers. I think he was over 200 innings in most of his full seasons. The dude shoved, kind of like your argument for Zach Wheeler that we had earlier. It was just, he was always on the mound, and he was pretty much going through the lineup three times every time through.
Yeah, I remember when the Red Sox used to face him, I used to hate it because I knew we weren't going to put up a lot of runs. I mean, he almost won Cy Young in 1996, his second year, and he finished in second. Fifth in Cy Young in 97, and then a few more fourth, fifth, sixth places along his career.
I mean,
I think a underrated player.
I agree. As an Orioles fan, of course, I also hated to face him, mostly because, you know, the Orioles sucked during most of his career. But it was never fun facing him, even during the better seasons for the Orioles. And whenever you heard that he was pitching, you're like, we're going to have to shove for ourselves if we're ever going to have a chance against this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at one year in particular right here. I mean, 1997, he pitched 240 innings with a 2.88 ERA.
And what was his whip that year? Like 1.2?
Yeah, like a 1.2 whip, which wasn't terrible for the time. I mean, he had a little bit of a walk problem.
But he didn't have a home run problem at all. He only gave up 7 home runs in 240 innings.
Especially in Yankee Stadium.
In old Yankee Stadium, to be fair, but like, that was still never a pitcher-friendly ballpark. They got lucky having a guy that didn't give up bombs like that, because that's something that's hard to come by in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, he was just an all-around good pitcher.
And I mean, you know, with the other guys that you have on your ballot that I don't have on mine, like Rodriguez and Schilling, I've explained it. I think that their numbers back them up. Rodriguez, as much as I hate him as a cheater and as a Orioles fan, the dude was undeniably great.
Yeah, I mean, another guy, I know he's another steroid user, one of the first ones actually, but I gotta show him some love with Manny Ramirez. I mean, guy got me to fall in love with baseball. He was an absolute clown on and off the field. He was one of those players that fun to watch. I mean, he hit that bomb against the Angels and had the absolute photo of baseball, one of the best photos of baseball history. I mean, he's almost won MVP a few times with the Red Sox.
And he was a good hitter.
Oh, he was amazing. I mean, he used to put up 40 bombs a year guaranteed with the Red Sox, 130 RBIs. Got 165 RBIs one time with the Cleveland Indians.
And he was hitting for contact, too. There was a few years where he was hitting nearly 350, I think over 350 one year. It's crazy to think about nowadays when we don't even see guys get 200 hits. But guys back then were getting 200 hits. They were getting 350 averages. It's just something that's really been lost on the game recently.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a interesting career. He's throughout the course of his career, he led the league in batting average, home runs, RBIs, OPS.
And also blunders to lose games. I know you're very aware of that. But the thing that comes to mind for me whenever you hear about Manny Ramirez is against the Orioles when he made that running catch, then ran up the wall, gave a fan a high five, and still ended up turning the double play at first base from left field. It was, you know, a testament to how bad the Orioles had been, but it was just such a funny play, and the dude was always fun to watch.
Yeah, he's one of those players that I used to love to watch as a kid, just loved playing the game, loved interacting with fans. Kind of like a present-day example would be an Alex Verdugo type. He just, I mean, Manny stopped the game to go pee in the Green Monster. I mean, the guy was just full of laughs, and he's always going to go down as one of my favorite players and a legend in baseball history.
Even if he doesn't get into the Hall of Fame. he deserves the recognition at least of how good of a player he was and how fun of a player he was.
Definitely deserves some love. I know one more guy I know I keep showing people love out here is Tim Lincecum. Guy had a dominant stretch in San Francisco.
There's no way that man makes it to the Hall of Fame.
He definitely doesn't, but I mean, he had no longevity at all, but that 2-3 years where he was just the best pitcher in baseball and part of the dynasty in San Fran where they won 2010, 12, and 14, I believe.
It was those even years, man.
Yeah.
The even years for the Giants, the odd years for the Cardinals, those were some weird baseball seasons, and just a testament to that is the Tim Lincecum experience, because he just could do no wrong, it seemed like.
Well, he looked like what DeCrom looks like nowadays. I mean, he was just dominating left, right, won back-to-back Cy Youngs in 08, 09.
And he had a wonky delivery.
He was an interesting pitcher.
Yeah, to say the least. And it is kind of a shame that he never really had that longevity factor, because he was a fun guy to watch. The wonky delivery, the strikeouts, the Cy Youngs, and he was working hard, too. 220 innings in those Cy Young years. It's just something that doesn't get enough love. And I think that we gotta remember the fun guys in the game.
Yeah, two-time Cy Young, 4-time All-Star, 3-time World Series. It might not be a Hall of Fame guy, but he's one of those guys that people our age, the 18, 19, late high school kids, college kids, they'll always remember Tim Lincecum if you tell them the name.
Yeah, the dude was a staple in baseball at the time. But I guess that's it for today. I mean, we got through all those topics, and I would say relatively fast. Next week, we're going to pop off with a new episode. It's been great being here in the armbar, man.
Yeah. All right, guys. We're going to go get stretched and ready to go into the game. So have a good night, and we'll see you.